So he is now nationally famous. As we were just talking off the air, I heard Mark Levin, the great one, referring to some research that Murata Wealth Management had done. That would be David Murata, our guest right now. He's the president of Murata Wealth Management. We're talking today about taxation, a tax on the rich, the so-called fiscal cliff, and ways that you might plan your taxes to save some of the money that you earned. And David Murata, welcome back to The Shilling Show. Always good to have you here. And congratulations on not only this national recognition, but also recently on MSNBC as well, or CNBC?
At least my analysis, not me by name.
Okay. Well, it's great. You do a lot of work, and I know you take a lot of time in researching these things, and I'm glad that you're being recognized. You know, we're going to be talking today about taxation and a concept called duodecit taxation. We'll get into that in a minute. But I wanted to start out by talking about the attack, and I'm using those words because I think it's exactly what it is, the attack on the quote-unquote rich. Why do we have this, and why are we in it now? I mean, maybe it's been with us to some extent for a while, but this isn't how America was founded.
Yeah, I think as the country gets more narcissistic and more self-centered, it's becoming very difficult for anyone to look at the big picture. And unfortunately, very few people understand what running a small business and having all of their all of that income flow onto your 1040 actually looks like. Also, as the politics of the country gets more snarky, it gets more like a sports contest where you're rooting for your side to win, and you want your side to win, and you want to stick it in the eye of the other side as much as possible. And so it's getting much more crude, vicious, and facts don't seem to have a whole lot of gravitas on either side. They're not very well respected. And so if you can say something that's true and snarky, even if it's not accurate, it becomes more and more promoted within the media. And that's what sells. Snarky is in today. And so it's difficult to have a reasoned discussion on just the facts and what it's going to look like.
You know, I'm wondering here in the context of this discussion with the president and pretty much everybody on down the line, at least on one side of the political spectrum and even a little on the other, condemning the quote-unquote rich as if they were some class that deserves no protection because they can be pillaged now. I mean, what is it that we aspire to in America? We used to be a country where everybody aspired, or most people, would love to be doing well like that, and now we want to tear these people down. Have we changed our aspirations? Do we all want to be poor now?
Yeah, I think we have changed our values, and our values are no longer and it's called the rich, which always bothers me because to me there's three different definitions of rich, and to me they're very important, and I try to use different words for them. If you're just talking about people who have amassed a lot of wealth, then the term wealthy is better than rich. If you're talking about the tax code, though, you're talking not about the people who have amassed a lot of wealth, not the wealthy. You're actually talking about the most productive people. And so what you're not trying to tax the rich in the sense of the wealthy. You're trying to tax the rich in the sense of the productive, people who employ a lot of other people, people who produce a lot of the GDP that we rely upon, people who pay a tremendous amount in taxes. And so the productive is very different. And then to me, most people's impression of the rich are neither the wealthy nor the productive. They're the people who live rich, which I would call spendthrifts, people who are living well above their means and look rich. And that's just a different class entirely. Most of the small business owners I know don't have that much greater multiple in terms of their spending. They have a huge multiple in terms of their earning, but they use that to plow it back into their entrepreneurship of new businesses. And that's exactly what we want to encourage, and yet by taxing the most productive, we're actually just discouraging that.
Yeah, this is a fascinating distinction, and I'm glad that you brought it up. We're talking with David Murata. He's the president of Murata Wealth Management. We encourage your participation today at 977-1070. Now, I think this attack on the rich and the wealthy has dangerous aspects, very dangerous aspects. I'm reading a book right now by Craig Smith and Lowell Ponte called The Great Debasement. And one of the points that they make, and I thought it was right on target, David, was they compared today's attack on the rich in America to the Nazis' attack on the Jews and the demonization of the Jews as a pretext to go in and confiscate all of their wealth. Do you share my fear that this constant haranguing on the rich and the wealthy would somehow be a prelude to some sort of American confiscation of wealth?
I do, because of the language that's used against the most productive people in America. I do. It's very difficult to generate sympathy for people who are earning a lot of money, but I do believe that there's a financial bigotry and a financial discrimination. The more I study the tax code, I just finished a wonderful class out at PVCC on taxation, and the more that I study the tax code, the more I realize that to discriminate between dollars is a terrible economic discrimination. So if you have a business owner who's very productive and wants to start another business, to tax those new business dollars different because he's productive than you would someone else who's maybe just starting out and isn't as productive produces all kinds of economic destruction. And so you can be financially bigoted, and you can have a financial discrimination, and to do that within economics just doesn't make any sense. It's very destructive to the economic well-being of the country. But it's very difficult to get any kind of sympathy for the rich as a persecuted class. But when 51% can heap all kinds of terrible things on the other 49%. It's one of the places where democracy breaks down because we lack some basic civil rights.
And I think this is why the founders were so solid in their opposition to progressive taxation. They may not have used the term, but they were very clear that they wanted people to be in for a penny, in for a pound. And this would solve all of that, because if you're all of a sudden haranguing for higher tax rates and you yourself are going to have to pay them, you may be less enthusiastic about the concept.
That's correct. And it would be as though we took one class of people and we said, we're going to tax you at a different rate than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just keep pushing that as far as you want to make it worse and worse and worse. And there's no disincentive.
977-1070 is the phone number. We're heading into the break and we'll take your calls as well at 977-1070. Our guest is David Murata. A very important conversation today about taxation. We'll talk about the fiscal cliff. And some of these concepts that are being thrown around here, they actually hold water? Is there any economic sense behind some of the proposals of the president and this administration? Anyway, we'll get into that and tax planning strategies and other things you need to hear about. Stay with us. The Shilling Show. We'll be back with David Murata in a moment. You are with The Shilling Show, coming up in hour number two. It's Albemarle County Board of Supervisor member Ken Boyd. Right now we continue this conversation with David Murata on taxation, the fiscal cliff, a tax on the rich, and also some tax strategies, planning that you can do to save some money, because there's change in the wind, and it will be change out of your pocket for sure. Let's go to the phones right now, because he's been waiting through the break. And by the way, we have a line open as Bruce stands by at 977-1070. If you have comments, questions, or challenges for our guest, yeah, I'd love to hear from you. I know we have some people on the left who probably think all of this increased taxation will lead us to great prosperity in America, and we'd love to take your challenges. Greg, welcome to The Shilling Show.
Hey, Rob. Hey, David. I really appreciate both of you all. I have two technical questions and then just a general political comment. The technical questions are, with the health care bill, we have to pay some kind of 3.8% if we sell our home. Is that on the total amount of gain, less basis? And do we keep the $500,000 exclusion, or is it on above $250K? The second question is, on our 401Ks, invested with pre-tax money, should we just cash them in, take the hit now? And then the political comment is, you know, Cuba is a good example of egalitarian society. Nobody has anything, and that's where we're headed, because they're going to confiscate our property. They're going to confiscate incrementally everything we have, and they're going to do it from every angle, local, state, and federal. And I'll just sign off and listen.
Yeah, Greg, thanks very much. I call it the lowest common denominator, as I recall from early years of math, and it's where we're heading now socially, I believe. David?
Yeah, Greg has great questions, and this is going to get a little bit technical only because the tax code gets a little bit technical. The healthcare tax is 3.8% on capital gains over $250,000 in income or in the gains, and there's a it's whichever one is higher. So if you have more than $250,000 of unearned income, then the unearned income can be taxed, or the amount over $250,000, whichever one is less. So if you're below $250,000, you do not have to worry about the Obamacare tax. If you're above $250,000 a year annual income, thank you for being so productive and helping the country. I'm the only one, and Rob are the only ones who will thank you. Mm-hmm. But you do have a bullseye painted on your back, and you will get hit with this tax. You still have the $250,000 deduction between you and your spouse when you sell your house. And if you're anywhere where you have a very expensive house, you need to make sure you move every time you get over $250,000 in gain. Mm-hmm. I have some clients in California who have over that, and the best way to be in the top 1% tax bracket is to sell a highly appreciated house you've lived in for a long time in California, and you really get hit with taxes. So the healthcare tax is an extra 3.8% on those making over $250,000. Greg's second question was on your 401k, do you just cash it in and take the hit? And the answer, Greg, is no. It turns out with capital gains or income, it's usually good to let it compound as long as possible without paying tax on it, unless you can get it into a vehicle which is tax-free forever. I used to be a physics major, and the Roth IRA or the Roth 401k is that frictionless vacuum we always used to long for in physics, because the calculations all made sense. So if you can convert a 401k to a Roth 401k or an IRA to a Roth IRA before the end of the year, there is a right amount to convert, and you need to know what that right amount is, and it depends on your tax bracket. If you make over $300,000, the correct amount is everything you can. And we have a new client who were converting $1 million in Roth before the end of the year, and they're going to pay $400,000 rather than $500,000 later, and they'll save $100,000, and they're still young enough that they can continue to contribute. So doing the Roth conversion before the end of the year, you have 20 days left to do the Roth conversion and pay tax at the lower rates. There is a right amount to convert, and we've done a lot of calculations on those, and we have some on our website to try to determine that.
And by the way, you can visit David online at maradaonmoney.com. There's lots of good information there. Franklin is with us, and there is a line open for you. Comments or questions for David Marotta, we'd love to hear from you. Franklin, welcome to The Shilling Show, and you're on with David Marotta.
Thank you, sirs. My question is regarding my IRA. I'm not happy with it, and I see great opportunities in the real estate market. Is it possible to set up a rental income-producing property as an IRA?
Franklin, that's a great question. There are only certain things that you can put into an IRA, and a business that you're running is not easy to put in. It's very difficult to put in. And the reason why they don't want that is every business owner would put their business in a Roth IRA when it's worth zero, and then they would build their business in their Roth IRA where it would never be taxed. And there's a tax rule that you can almost always count on, the GAW rule. Government always wins, and they don't let you put closely held businesses. If you're trying to put a piece of rental property into a Roth IRA, I would either talk to a specialist, meaning a CPA, to figure out what the rules are to be able to do that, or I would not do it. I've never thought it was worth trying to comply with all the rules, because the things I want to put in there are the things they won't let you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Franklin, thanks very much. 977-1070 is the phone number. David Marotta is our guest. So let's go very quickly to this concept of duodeci taxation, because I want people to understand what this is and what it means.
Yeah, I was trying to think about a way of describing the fiscal cliff in better terms than the fiscal cliff, because it makes it sound like we're going to go off this cliff and we're all going to go off equally, and the answer is we're not. If the typical family of four has a tax increase of $2,200, as Obama claims, the most productive in America, the top 1% earning over $500,000, have an average increase in their taxation by about $100,000.
I've got to stop you there, because I saw these figures in the column that you wrote, and it was astounding to me, because to hear the president talk, hey, we're just talking about an extra 2 or 3%, That couldn't possibly be the case if their taxes are going up by $100,000. That couldn't be 2% of their total taxes.
Well, it turns out the average person who earns more than $500,000 has an income of about $1.2 million. Mm-hmm. And the taxation is, it's 4.6% in the tax brackets. It is 3.8% because they do get hit with the full Obamacare tax.
Mm-hmm.
It's another 1.2% in what they call deduction phase-outs, meaning that all of their deductions get phased out, and it ends up adding about 1.2%. That adds up to about 9.6%. The 9.6% is the number I've been working with. That doesn't count the marriage penalty that's coming back. So there's still a lot of fudge in there. But if you take $1.2 million and you multiply times 9.6%, you get about $120,000. It might only be $100,000 because it's the lower brackets. The amount, there's the first $250,000 are get taxed at lower increases. So it ends up being a little over $100,000, and a little over $100,000, you know, on top of the huge tax that you're already paying at $1.2 million, is a huge tax increase. It's two more people in your business. It's trying to come up with that money somewhere. It's a lack of being able to invest that in new ventures. And so it does make a huge bit difference, which is why most small business owners I know have been banking as much cash as they can rather than doing anything with it. And so there's no new investment. There's no pay increases. There's nothing like that. And that is the concept of duodeci taxation. It is the heaping of all of our tax troubles on the 1/20th who employs the other 19. And what we're becoming as a society is where 1 out of 20 are paying all of the taxes. And so in order to pay all the taxes, they have to pay everyone else slightly less, which is in essence letting them pay some of that tax too. And so a lot of our small business owners say, hey, I can't afford to pay this. If everyone else is getting off scot-free in the business, I can't afford for it to all fall on me because I don't even have a profit margin that's that big, and I need to do something about it. And so they've been trying to figure out what they can do. How can everyone else pay their 9.6%? And so one thing you can do is you can reduce everyone's salary by 9.6% and say, hey, we're going to do all this evenly. Or you can keep it constant for 3 years and let 3 years of 3% inflation pay for the 9.6%. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that small business owners can do to make that equal and fair, and they will. And what it means is their salary will have to be really huge to pay the tax for everyone in the firm, and it means the gap between the rich and the poor will get greater.
Yeah, the law of unintended consequences may be at play here, or maybe it is intended after all. You know, I want to go back to this discrepancy because I think in your piece I read that the middle class family would probably have another $2,200 under the fiscal cliff scenario in taxation, but this huge discrepancy of $100,000 or $120,000 for people making above $500,000 a year—it's astounding to me because, again, the way that it's being portrayed by every single Democrat who is promoting this and by the media is it's just an extra couple percent. I mean, that could be no further from the truth than it is. I mean, it is unbelievable to me that they can get away with this. Have you heard any national media people saying what you've said? Because I haven't.
I really haven't. I'm not sure the Republicans know what to do at this point because the fiscal cliff is everything that the Democrats want. It sticks the most productive members of society with a huge tax bill. It slashes defense spending, which they've wanted to do. That's not a negative to them. And even in the Medicare cuts, it only cuts reimbursement to doctors. So which is the whole premise of Obamacare is that you can slash payments to doctors by 30% and still make them and force them to pay the same to provide the same amount in benefits. And so, I know doctors who are just going to walk away from supporting Medicare entirely as a result of this. But this is the whole premise of Obamacare. If this slash doesn't work, if it doesn't work the way they want it to work, then Obamacare doesn't work because you can't just dictate prices then.
You know, this is interesting because a lot of doctors already had been pulling out of Medicare and not taking new patients, and this is going to accelerate it. Again, we were never told this was going to happen. This wasn't how the program was being sold to the people that voted for it, and yet here we are.
Yeah, it's very difficult. My guess is with what's going to happen with the fiscal cliff is most of the Republicans can't get anything done before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure the Democrats want to get anything done before the end of the year. And if the Republicans do some kind of a compromise before the end of the year, it would involve raising taxes from where they are now. After the fiscal cliff hits and the tax rates all roll in, then they can vote to decrease taxes, which a lot of them have taken the no new increase tax pledge. So before the end of the year, they can't solve the problem, and the Democrats have no incentive to solve the problem. So I predict nothing will happen before the end of the year, and sometime in early January we'll reach some kind of a compromise. But no one is floating anything serious before the end of the year.
977-1070 is the phone number. We'll have our final segment with David Morata and you. Stay with us right after this. All right, heading into the final segment, it's going to be a short one just because we've got so much to talk about and we ran a little late. David Morata is our guest. Let's go to the phones immediately and say hello to Carol. And Carol, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Morata. Go right ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, David. Quick question for you. My husband and I, next year, we're looking at rewriting wills and getting some financial ducks in a row. And one of the things we're going to do, hopefully, is to establish a special needs trust for our son. He is intellectually disabled, has autism, and he's going to need lifelong assistance. Now, he will be eligible for Medicaid and for SSI. My understanding is that he can't have more than $2,000 in assets, or at least cash assets. Otherwise, that starts to impact his benefits. But my question to you is, with all the financial upheaval going on, do you know if there's anything new in this this world of special needs trust that I should be aware of?
Carol, it's a great question, and special needs trusts have are most unique, and I applaud you for setting one up and making sure that your son is able to qualify for all the government assistance that he can, and you should look at that. I don't think there's anything new in special needs trusts, and it sounds like if you're going to a good estate planning attorney, they'll be able to handle all that properly. So I don't think there's anything new, and it is good to have it in trust just for the listeners who don't understand it, so that the trustee has the ability to pay to enhance your son's lifestyle, but your son does not own the asset so that he can still qualify for government assistance. So
that's correct. It does protect him in the long run. We haven't taken any assistance for him. He's 16 now, and we don't plan to do it, you know, while we're his parents to age 18, but obviously at the point that he becomes an adult, you know, then he's, you know, we're going to obviously get him qualified for whatever we can, just like, you know, anybody else, you know, would do for their child. So, yeah, there's an organization, in fact, that may be even contacting you. It's in Richmond. They've been in existence for about 20 years. They do a pooled disability trust, and then they do investments and all of that. But this was set up originally by parents of special needs kids, basically filling a void for something that didn't exist when their children got to be old enough to need this kind of thing. So.
Yeah, that's interesting that you can do a pooled trust so that you don't have to incur all of the trust overhead, but you can still benefit from the investment growth.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. I do think rewriting your wills is a good idea to make sure that this is all in place, and it sounds like you're doing everything right.
Carol, thanks so much for the call. Always good to hear from you. Just literally like 2 minutes left to talk about some tax saving strategies based on what we believe is coming.
Yeah, first of all, convert the optimum amount of your IRA to a Roth IRA before the end of the year. That's probably the most important. You've got 20 days left to do it. There isn't an optimum amount. It's usually raising it to the top of either the next tax, the current tax bracket you're in, or the next tax bracket beyond that. And again, if you have if your income is over $300,000 and you have not converted anything to a Roth, there are huge savings that can be made, but you need to act between now and the end of the year, and it's just amazing how much difference it will make going forward. And then beyond that, investing in a Roth this year is a good idea, and then depending upon your tax bracket for next year, you may want to change your Roth 401k to a traditional 401k to try to have more deductions in the coming year. Additionally, to try to postpone your giving, if you do a lot of charitable giving in December, giving in December is not worth as much as giving in January because of the new tax strategy. So if you do your charitable giving in January and December of next year, you'll give the same amount. You'll just shift it by 1 month. And this is a year where shifting income forward and shifting deductions backward makes perfect sense. In terms of realizing capital gains, There is something to be made for realizing capital gains this year, but it all depends on how much gain you have and when you're going to need the money. You should realize capital gains for anything that you need the money in the next 3 years is the rule of thumb, except for those below $70,000 in income, and then you should realize so you make your income up to $70,000. Anything below $70,700 this year in income or capital gains, the capital gains is taxed at a zero rate. So last year you can have a zero rate below $70,000. So you should realize all your gains up to $70,000. Next year that rate rises to 10%, and everyone else's rises from 15 to 20. So there's opportunities there as well.
You know, we were all looking forward to a new administration and the promises of decreased taxation for businesses, for capital gains, and for so many other purposes. And now we're having to deal with Taxmageddon. And I'm glad that you have these opportunities for people to consider before the end of the year, David.
Well, I will say most of the time we're talking about investments and what you make on investment returns. But these have certainly been a few years where we've been talking about taxes and tax planning and how much money you can save there.
Always appreciate your visits to this program, and you can visit David Morata online at moratonmoney.com. David, we wish you and your family a Merry Christmas, and thank you so much for participating here regularly.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll do it again, except next time it will be 2013. That is, if the Mayans were not correct. So I guess all of this doesn't matter in that case. The Shilling Show heading into the break. We'll have time for your calls at the top of the hour. I'd love to hear from you. I have some breaking news on His Holiness the Dalai Lama, apparently a cash machine for the city of Charlottesville. I'll get into that. Maybe we all should have invested in His Holiness the Dalai Lama instead of where other places we put our money. Hey, stay with us. We'll be back. 977-1070.
Ezekiel went down in the middle of